You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Jack, I think this is a timeless episode, this one.
It's timeless, and I'm still like grinning ear to ear. I can't stop laughing. This person just has that effect on me.
True.
Gosh.
Yeah. And there's
upset about it, or am I like, I don't know.
Not in the least. I think I saw you fall over in your chair at least 6 or 7 times, which is, I mean, good number. You're okay though.
Yes. I'm well.
Thank God. Thank God. Well, this is a journey from Orlando. Well, no, from Kentucky to Orlando to New York that is just so legendary and continues to be iconic in her everyday life. But Angie. It literally is synonymous with Roxy, I feel like.
Totally.
With like the level of the name.
I mean, there's just, she's untouchable, number one. And just no one can do it like Ange. Slam and Ange. She's fantastic. So we had people write in, Brendan. We have fans. They're following. We're up and coming. This is groundbreaking. This is huge. But we have people who wrote into our Instagram. Our Instagram is @again_podcast. So follow us, write into us if you have questions. But we have people who wrote in where you get to ask Angie some questions today and just zazz it up with Ange a little bit.
We are going to zazz it. We're going to take this whole thing from the top. And I can't wait to get into this one.
From the top. 6, 7, 8.
Do you guys have a jingle that you start out with?
there's a bit of a jingle.
I want to hear it. Ready, go.
There's a bit of a jingle.
Take it from the top.
Taking it from the top.
From the top.
Well, we're going to use that tap. Now.
Well, I mean, that's probably,
I mean, better than what we have.
Tap, tap.
Angie.
Hi, boys.
Angie.
Schwoer. How are you?
We're in heaven. This is
finally.
Tippy tap, heaven. Hi, boys. I'm happy to see you.
Hi, boys.
Those are my boys.
How many times in a show, Angie, have you had to have a chorus of men around you to say, "Let's go, boys"? I feel like
come
it's
on,
a
boys.
Requirement.
I don't know. I don't know. I wish it was more.
Not enough.
Not enough. Yeah.
Not enough.
Probably only doing Roxy Hart. When did I ever get to say my boys? Those are my boys. I just do it all the time. You know. You know how
she
I am.
She just does it, and people come
to her room.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're summoned. They're summoned with her aura.
You know, I have my. My boys that I always call my sons. Remember, Brendan, you were my son.
I do. I remember having the privilege to be a son in the company.
And then Slammin' Jack.
Slammin' Ange.
We got to do our prom together on the Broadway. Mm-hmm. Brendan already left us.
Mm-hmm.
He left us. Better things.
For another high school.
Yeah, for another high school.
Another high school.
Oh my gosh.
Well, Ange, what we like to do here again from the top, we like to kind of start these things off discussing kind of like the top of your career, like how we got into this. I usually call it like how, what's your origin story into this whole insanity of a business that we all decided this will be a good idea to go into. So kind of like if there was like a bug that bit you that got you into this, or kind of where it all like clicked and said, oh, I'm doing this for sure. Do you have like that moment or that kind of decision in your brain of like when this started?
I probably do. I probably have several origins of the beginnings, but for musical theater, it would have to be not till college. I got to do my first part, and it was Lois in Kiss Me, Kate. And obviously those are the kind of parts I do where you sing a little, act a little, dance a little, right? You got to do a little bit of everything.
Sure.
And I did, it kind of bit me that did, you know, because I could do it. You know, it wasn't park and barking, you know, which I don't do. It was a little bit of everything. So it wasn't probably till then. In high school, I was a cheerleader and, you know, I danced. Wow. I danced from 5 years old. I always danced, but I didn't get the sort of musical theater, acting, singing, all of that until I studied it a bit in college. So a late bloomer. A late bloomer I am.
A late bloomer.
And then I didn't go like, you know, I feel like you kids today are just so smart and knowing exactly what you want to do. I grew up in Northern Kentucky, a small town in Kentucky, and I didn't know, oh, Broadway, like this is how I'm going to get there. I just took what came to me and it led me here. Leroy Reams was also from my dance studio, Ziegler Studio of Dance. He was a little older than me, but I had heard of him and he was on Broadway, you know, which I just didn't know how I was going to do it or how to get there. You know, I just feel like people are just smarter now. You know, I didn't have all the luxuries that kids these days have with looking up things on the internet and copying, and you know, so it took me a little while, but then I ended up in New York, but via college, via Busch Gardens in the summer German show and the indoor show, via Disney World, you know, opening up MGM Studios, via Showgirl in Atlantic City, via Japan Showgirl.
Sorry, what?
Being a showgirl, yeah.
Just in Japan just showgirl life.
Tokyo. Yeah, just at the new Otani Hotel, showgirl.
Okay. Sure.
Not topless, always have my top on, boys.
Top full, thank you.
Tasteful.
Tasteful Tokyo.
Tasteful Tokyo, and then I was opened up MGM Studios. I'm at Disney and doing my, you know, not eight shows a week, doing my five shows a day, as one does.
Wow.
Oh, God. And my I was going to, oh my God. And I've been watching videos because I've been condensing stuff and just thrashing, you know, back then. Yeah. Just an arch back, easy breezy.
Ponytail to the ground.
A loose neck.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And, I put a down payment on a house. I was going to build a house in Lake Buena Vista, which probably now I'd be a bazillionaire if I had done that. But then I got a call to come up and audition for the Will Rogers Follies. So I did. So I pulled my down payment.
Give that back.
And I moved to Hollywood. No, I moved to Broadway.
She got a briefcase in her hand or a suitcase in her hand and she's getting off the bus.
When I moved to Broadway. So I did through a friend that worked with me at Diamond Horseshoe at Disney. He was a PA, DJ Salisbury. He was a PA on Will Rogers Follies. He said, I think you should come up and audition. One of the prerequisites is they wanted you over 5'8". Well, I'm that. And then I did. I flew up and auditioned on their workshop lunch break at the Niederlander, which you both have worked at. They were workshopping on stage back then. This is 1991.
How cool.
And I auditioned on their lunch break for the workshop. I flew up from Orlando. Little did I know, in the audience watching, having their lunch was Jerry Mitchell, Katie Huffman, Troy Johnson, and a lot of the cast from Will Rogers. And in the audience was Tommy, in the house was Tommy Toon, Cy Coleman, I sang on the other side of the tracks, but didn't know it was a Cy Coleman tune. Mm. And he said, you know, that's my song. I was like, yeah.
Of course.
Totally live. Sure. And did the audition on the stage and ended up getting it. So they needed two swings. And so I was one of the last people hired and then came up once it was out of workshop and starting for the Palace. And then 3 decades later, I'm sitting here with you.
I mean, wow. There's something so timeless that I feel like is there's a certain nostalgia and kind of like iconic sense of having this to be able to live the auditioning on a theater stage, because it just doesn't happen anymore. Because I think, I don't know if it's just there's so many reasons of turnaround, or I mean, how many rehearsals are happening in a theater nowadays. But it's, I think there's something so just mystique about having to audition on a theater stage.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's for those of us who watch, you know, the old movie musical Moving Pictures, you know, that's what you see. You know, they're on the stage and they're leaning on the piano and it's a, hey, from the top. Hence your podcast.
Yes. I mean, that's where we got it from. That's from leaning on a piano in 1975.
I totally see it. I love that you said 1975. I mean, the Moving Picture musicals are back like in the 30s, but.
Of course. See?
For you, me, young.
For me, 75.
Mm-hmm.
Play it again, Sal. I assume his name's Sal. I don't know.
Yeah. And, play it again, see?
And so when growing up, what was some of your train like in dance? You obviously were at a dance school, I'm assuming, mm-hmm. growing up. So what were those like classes like for you? Were you just in that strict, you know, ballet, tap, jazz, and then just did it? Or what was that experience growing up?
I think my first love was acro, actually.
Yes,
The Producers was the last time I tumbled in a show. I did front handspring walkouts. My 5'11" gigantic frame could still tumble. I did back walkovers and walked on my hands in Chicago, the first national. Mm. And then the back walkover off the desk, Ula does, you mm-hmm. know, all of that helped those tricks, those things that I could do. Now my back, you know, she's shot, but I'll give you a nice arm back, like I'm arching back, but I'm not.
The cambre fake out.
Yes, the fake out.
Acro, I started with acro, and then honestly, once a week, half hour tap, jazz, ballet.
Wow.
Up until college. And then when I went to college, I had a ballet teacher, Linda Crumey, who kind of, I got it a little bit more as an adult. Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of learned I call it my flag in my foot.
Oh, yeah.
All those things. And so that kind of helped. But basically, I always say my style I got from Ziegler Studio of Dance. I got that. And if you look at the shows I've done, the Stro, Tappy Tappy, Tippy Tappy, mm-hmm. it's all about style. And, you know, I call my dancing through my resume, my tapping and tipping through my resume, because that's mm-hmm. kind of what I did. And in the 3 decades I've been in it, that's what I do, you know. Now we're on the outs. The old showgirls are on the outs.
Bring them back.
Bring them all back, please.
But so, Jack, it's not so you think you can dance, you know.
Totally.
I just was never that person and never, you know, but it was enough for me for what I came into at that time in the 90s, mm-hmm. right? And up until, I mean, what? We did it in Something Rotten. There was a lot. I mean, it was Renaissance time, but it was a tappy tippy and you had to have a jazz style, you know. Is it a Nicolau girl.
A Nicolau girl. Was there a moment when you look at your career and the other shows that have come up with you, has there been a moment where you stand and look back and say, or even kind of as you're in your career, like as you're going up and you look at a show and you're like, oh, so times are like that now, or you're like, oh, things have evolved to this. Okay, this is where we're going. Is there something you can like pinpoint?
Well, it's funny because I feel like there's always been those shows around what I'm doing, if I'm in a show on the Broadway at that time. But there's always the ones around me that wouldn't be for me, even if I was a Park and Barker, even if I could sing a high something, you know what I mean? They're just not for me. There's always those shows. Then it becomes more of like a style thing where even if I was young, I'm not going to be doing the style of Hamilton. Like, it's just not who Angie is. You know what I mean?
When did you see that change throughout your career?
I think it's always been prevalent. It's always been prevalent. I just happened to not be in that show. I just happened to be in the one that fit me, which I think is just how everybody's career is. It just became more prominent through the years. You know, things just have become hipper. If that's the, you know, most old-fashioned way for me to say it, right?
Yeah. I mean, when you say hipper, but I mean, as far as like the style that you have kind of, I mean, honed into, and I'm going to say mastered, because I just, I don't think there's anybody, if it's certainly of a certain jazz type and a tip type show, if Angie walks into the room, give her the job, it's done. And so I think you've helped to create and establish such a vernacular, I think, that it's nearly unteachable. Even as you sit here and like discuss certain things of like, you just say like a tippy-tappy, and those listening, you can't see like the little shimmy that happens in the shoulders and the relaxed face and the oozy smile that happens.
Well, you gotta show it. Yeah, I get it.
But you have I think it's like an essence that was kind of built from an aura of confidence and all of that. And I think there's such a thing of, sure, this young upstarts are kind of coming up and changing the style, but I think there is such a timelessness to your strength. And I think there's hopefully always going to be a spot of like old time. I don't want to say old time.
No. It's totally
music
fine.
Theater, you know?
Sweet. I get it. I'm old. I get it.
Baby, but I don't mean you. I just mean like the style. Almost, it's not outdated. I think it's timeless. And I think people absolutely still come to musical theater and to Broadway, especially to see that stuff. But I do think that like now that Hamilton has become so mainstream and in the Heights so mainstream of like these Lynn shows that have kind of like changed the direction, I think it is going to be interesting to see what happens with these timeless type musicals.
Well, and I hope and feel that there, it's sort of like, what do they always say? You know, there's a spot for everyone. There's a place for everyone. And I just sort of hope.
There's a place
for us. I feel like hopefully there will be that a little something for everyone. And it will come back around. And I don't even mean for me specifically, because even for the things like when Crazy for You was supposed to come back and things, you know, unless I'm Tess or something, you know, I've sort of aged out of being in that chorus, but I certainly would love for the youth that are of my stature and that can get to do it. So I'm not even saying for myself, you know, but I certainly would love that for other people to get to, you know, enjoy and be in those shows and experience the lusciousness of those great, you know, tap into the Gershwin tunes and I Got Rhythm. I mean, who doesn't want to fucking do I Got Rhythm, you know?
Truly, truly. I mean, and it's, I think it's, it was written in what, 1920 something or 1917 or who knows when I can't name it off
what,
the top
Girl
of my
Crazy?
Head.
You mean Girl Crazy?
Or I Got Rhythm just in general.
Oh, well, Gershwin. Yeah, probably.
Yeah. In that time, but it's still being done.
But what I love about our Casey Nicola is, especially in Something Rotten, and also in Minsky's that I did for him, you know, he likes all different shapes and sizes and ages and personalities, and somehow he puts it all together. And that's interesting to me. And I love being in that process because he knows your strengths. He knows what you can and cannot do. And you know what I mean? It's like,
yes.
He purposely picks, you know, certain people. And so I do love that. I remember specifically in, Brendan, you were probably there in which workshop of the prom. And we were doing what used to be not about me, but it was something else.
Oh, yeah.
And the girls.
Oh, yeah.
Really danced. I did the dance break by myself.
Yes.
Then the dancers came and were really dancing. Like, yeah. Shelby Finney was tearing it up. And I was like, I kind of went behind and I thought, well, let me just at least, you know, if I don't have to do what they're doing, but let me just, I'll pretend they were jumping and I just was like doing arms or whatever. And he's like, and she was like, yeah, yeah, that's not what, you don't do that well. So like, yeah, let's have you do something else. But he was true. But I was like, let me just try it, you know.
Sure.
I'll just try, give him something to look at, which is then that's when the all of my spinning and just my legs on the chair, I think, started sort of created. It, mm-hmm. I was like, well, I'll just sit in the chair and wave my legs around.
That's so right. Yeah, there was a moment when we added, I think, like, I mean, a couple major dance break counts. It was me, Shelby Finney, Ian Young, and Natalie Clay Carter. And there was, I mean, there was a point where we actually set up a box in the upstage for the dun dun da 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 dun dun da da da, some of that stuff.
Yes.
And we timed these jumps, jumping off this box. It was like a toe touch and a huge attitude leap. And we're like, what are we doing back here? We're killing ourselves. And Angie's just in a chair, just leg, leg, leg.
I was probably like just looking at my nails or something.
It's like, they got it.
Giving us something to look at is what she's doing.
Something
but,
to look at.
You know, it didn't hurt my feelings because he was being truthful, but it was like, mm-hmm. that's not what you do well. You know? Oh, and God. So I guess it's good when your director knows that too.
I will say something you do also really well. And one of my favorite performances of yours that I've gotten to witness is back at our Muni days when we both did Damn Yankees together back in 2008,
yeah.
9, whatever that was. And Angie was Lola. Let's just pause and think about Angie as Lola for a second. It was the most incredible thing.
No,
I've
let's
ever
pause
seen.
And think about that. Mary McLeod's taught me all of that original choreography. And let's be clear, I am not a trained Fosse dancer, but I worked my butt off and was mediocre at best, but I tried really hard. But what was it that made you laugh? Was it, come on, Joe? What did she say?
Can I get a line reading?
Joe, over here. I don't know which one. It's just so fun. It was so fun. And so I'm just so tall to do it too.
It was perfection though. You and Alex Sanchez together was like a match in heaven to do those two roles and to watch Who's Got the Pain, all of that.
And I thought he was like, Angie, you're a pain. Because I thought, because he's such a good dancer. And he was like, what is this giant Amazon that I am dragging through this number? Right? Because don't I have to get on his shoulders or something? Poor guy. He was like, oh. And I mean, it was Muni. And you know how hot it is there. And I was swimming and I was like in good shape for Big Ange. And he was like, you gotta get on my shoulders? Like, what the fuck? Sorry. What the hell?
Gosh darn Williker.
You have to on my shoulders.
I'm just crying laughing over here, A, because it's Angie and she always makes me do that. But also I'm picturing us back in that time. Like, I remember every second of that show and watching you do the show. So everything you're saying right now is just resonating with me really closely.
I couldn't breathe. It was so hot. I'm doing, who's got the pain? They go, mama. Who's got the pain? They go, ah.
It's also not a short number. It's also not a short number.
No, but it was actually, I worked with Mary McLeod before we went down there and she was exquisite. And I loved that time so much because it's probably the most, because she's so great at Fosse and worked with Gwen and, you know, really knows her stuff. So it was really fun to just try to attempt to learn and, you know, somehow
it was incredible. It was
create
incredible.
That and bring it to life, but haven't worked there since. They were like, yeah, no.
Oh my Lord. I would, I want to see the video of that. I want to see the mambo.
Yeah.
I want to see this so-called big Ange, as she says.
My muni career is over. You're the doll baby down there. Could you get me in?
I'll get you
Mama in. Mama needs a muni job.
Mm-hmm. I got you.
Mama needs a muni. I was literally just going to, I was going to bring forward the question of, okay, so we all have our kind of wind down. Because, you know, a Broadway schedule is it gets you through it's a ringer. It is a tough one. 8 shows a week on top of, you know, just living as an adult human in New York City. It's a tough way to go. I want to know, how do you have a specific chair at Sardi's that is yours to go to whenever your show comes down and Angie walks in and someone says, she's here, clear the chair. Where is yours? I guessed Sardi's just from, you know, Rotten Days, but is there a spot that you can want to walk into in New York City, or an old spot of time gone by that you remember in a New York City moment of, ah, this is my spot?
Not now, but back during the producers. I don't even mean not now because of COVID. I mean just not now. But during the producers, which was at the St. James, also where Something Rotten was, Angus. Mm-hmm. Angus used to be next door.
Right.
So we used to tease that if there was some way to do from I started out in the ensemble and then took over for Ula, but from either dressing room, if we just had sort of like a nice garbage chute that just could put me down right into the booth right there in the front of Angus. Actually, it was even before Angus because it was the Brasserie before that. Then it was Angus. But we enjoyed that. That was a good time because it was during that, the producers, which was, you know, just an otherworldly time with the way we went out of town and we came right into the St. James, and it was such a huge hit and won the most Tonys to this day. And it was just a time that was, you know, joyful. And so we went next door a lot.
Nice.
I think that would be then. I don't have anything now, even before the shutdown. And during prom, you know, we were trying to just be in it and get that show going, and we just, you know, so it wasn't, I wasn't out crazy all the time. We know how delicate my vocal cords are. I can't talk over people anymore, you know.
Trying to get those bags of Lay's chips back out. I don't know why you're not sponsored by Lay's, because we would walk into her dressing room and she would have a literal box by the size of me. And she goes, I got my Lay's. They came in today. And then there's just bags of Lay's chips that are
a
go-to snack.
Someone send that to Beth and I. I think it was one point it was Lyle, our dresser, bought us this huge bag. And they were all the individual assortment. And we would put stuff on Instagram like Lay's. Me, Caitlin, and Beth, I think, did one.
Yeah.
Nothing. We got nothing.
Nothing.
But, you know, I eat them because they're good for your voice, right?
Of course.
Even here's during COVID, you know, for speaking.
Well, Angie, we had people write into us on our Instagram. We have 3 questions for you today.
Oh.
Our Instagram, again, _podcast. Follow us and write to us. But we have 3 questions.
I got to follow you guys. I don't follow you yet. Teach me how.
We'll teach you. We'll get you there.
Okay.
Our first question is from Lisa. And she says, how do you manage to sing, dance, and not mess up all the time?
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary, and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. Suf's The Original New Musical from Shayna Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
So basically, how are you flawless? Because I can attest to that statement that I just made. Watching you literally every single night in the prom, every single night I would watch the show, and you are the most consistent performer I have ever seen. The way you put the Germex in your hand, where you put the Germex between your legs, the cup, everything where you hold it. It's the exact, the pat under the nose, all the things. It is to a T the same. And the energy is always there. The voice is always there. The moves are always there. The acting is always there. So how are you so consistent?
Well, you're very kind to say that, but that is the dancer background in me. And like I said this, I think before, repetition is always my friend. And that's when I feel like my show is the best, when it's slick to a T like that. And I don't, not every person's like that, because, you know, like our Brooksy loves to just fly off and do things. It's just not my makeup. And I wish it was, because I think he's so fearless and so incredible. And I wish I was that person, but I'm just not. And I think it's just, that's the dancer in me. And then once, you know, it's like right at the end was when I was like, okay, now my show's done. It's slick. It's how I you know, everything's on account. You know how we like to do every beat. Mm-hmm. I don't ever change it up. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I
was going to say, like, it's consistency that's not, you know, the boring, or because you are still so invested in the scene with your scene partner. So it's not that like glazed over, oh, she's doing the same thing again.
Yeah.
It's no, she's still giving a performance. It's just, it's
that's how I feel most comfortable. I don't like,
totally.
Oh, I'm just going to fly off the seat. I just don't work that way. And I think that's just from the dancer background, I guess. Is that it? Or just my OCD?
No, I would agree. I think you craft out this like polished performance. And as the dancer brain goes repetition, repetition, repetition until it's second nature and it's just done in your sleep, but you're so present because of the practice and the polish that you've put into the performance. How many P's can I get in one sentence?
I don't know, but it's crisp and clear.
It's great.
But even when I'm not doing a part, which is most usually my career too, even for like something rotten, you know, like when it turned into the go-go thing, I'd choreograph my stuff with my what's that thing called?
What was that? The air blower thing. It's like some medieval name.
It's going to come
here.
I'll
make
me.
This sound. It
sounds
like
this. You have to look it
that
up.
It sounds like it's like a beluga whale, I think is what I'm doing. Actually,
I know what it is. I know what it is. See, that's what happens when you get old. It's going to come to me. Honey, what's those blower things for the fire?
Perfect.
This is a lifeline. Lifeline.
Lifeline, ask the husband.
It is called a...
We'll never know.
No, we got to look it up. Someone Google it while I'm talking.
We will.
Rich, I'll ask you.
I have the next question for you while we're looking that up.
Oh, shit. Okay, but wait. But before I finish, using that thing, I had all these moves choreographed because it was so heavy. I didn't want to hit people. Right? So you have to choreograph where it's going to go. And I did it the exact same thing every time. So in that case, it was to make sure I didn't hit Eric Scotto because he was right there, right? Bam, bam. Mm. So you have to choreograph it. Bellows. It's called a bellows.
It's called a bellows. We had it here. We had it here.
So when I used my bellows, in something rotten. It was choreographed to a T so that I didn't poke somebody in the eye. So there's different reasons for it, but I just feel more comfortable and a slicker performer when I do that. That's the answer to my question. You're welcome. Thank you.
Slick to a T.
Slick to a T. The next question is from Marin, and she wants to know, what made you decide you wanted to dance? Was there something or someone that you look up to and you were like, yep, I love that. I want to do that. Get me in the door.
I think the joy of it came before I even was old enough to know what I was watching and who I was watching. The joy of it, of just the dancing part and the never sitting still part, was just innate in me. So it started from a very young age. The round of back handsprings down the hallway to greet everyone in my house just started. Oh,
that would've been
broken. Yeah,
could
my
you imagine
sister-in-law,
if that was the greeting you got from Angie Shore?
My sister-in-law, oh my God, she says she's still married to my brother and they were high school sweethearts. And so she was in high school when I would have been young enough to fit in a hallway doing round of back handsprings. And she said I would literally go round up a casual and turn and go like, hi, I'm Angie.
Oh, my God. No wonder cheerleading was like right there.
Yeah.
Too.
So she imitates me doing that. So I think the joy of it was already there before I had the knowledge to watch, you know, any dancers. Oh, God, it had to have been on a TV set, you know, back then because it was the covered wagon days, guys. The Pony Express came to my house.
We took the Oregon Trail, and I saw my first moving picture.
Yeah, but so I guess it was just innate. That's my answer, Marin. I hope that brings something to you. But even watching me in my Disney days, like I said, I'm condensing stuff and putting on thumb drives, and I'm looking at it, and it's like I loved it. I love doing 5 shows a day in the heat. I don't know why. I just. Yeah. Loved it. And we carried feathers and we carried giant bananas and danced with Minnie Mouse. And I just loved it. So
we were indestructible.
Yeah. And you just throw your back out and kick your face. And now I like, as you know, I like my vertical with gestures a little bit more than
there it is.
Kicking and, you know, I like vertical gestures.
Vertical with gestures.
The idea and the joy is still there.
Of course. There's always purpose. A motivation of why she's making the gesture, and she's staying vertical. This is the world
that
we
live. My tissue just doesn't move as well as it used to. I keep on taking Deb Roche's class, though. I got to tell you, Britt likes my vertical gesture.
Still in class. I love that.
Still in class. Yeah, 4 times a week, baby. I mean, it's here in my dining room. It's not. I don't get to move around, but that's good for Ange, you know, keeping it tall and tight.
Tall and tight. We travel tall and underneath tight. Ourselves. That's what we do. That's what we do.
I love that.
I love that Jack writes something down. When do you kids do handwriting?
Oh,
all the time.
All the time.
All the time.
You do still do handwriting? My stepson stops being able to read my cards I give to him because he doesn't read handwriting anymore. And he grew up with my handwriting. I got him at 10 years old. He's 25 now. He can't read my handwriting.
No, I always have to, I mean, as dance captains, we got to like watch the show and like literally have to be able to write and watch.
Yeah, without
the same time.
Now, going to start typing? Because then you can't do that because then the screen people can't see.
I started doing voice memos when I would watch from a spot and I'd literally just be so quiet and be like,
Slamming Jack, you need to raise your right arm higher on the 5, 6, 7, 8.
Perfect. Thank vertical.
You. Dance
thank
you. For you.
Need more vertical gestures on stage right. Perfect.
Voice memos were huge, though, especially for me with prom, just because the show moves so fast and there's so many steps for 3 counts that it's hard to like get it all in. And obviously if it's a fluke, it's a fluke. You let it go. You can't notate every single thing, but you can't just write. It just moves so fast. You got to talk it into it and then kind of review it later and then type it out, whatever you say.
I know you were so good at that. I don't know how you do that. Did you go all the way to the top and just keep real quiet so the audience couldn't hear you?
Well, I was just all over the theater. To be honest, I was a lot in stairwells, or I would remember the notes while I watch one number and then walk away and then talk it all into the phone just like I could remember it. But I would always watch the show from every different part of the theater. I would never have one spot.
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine, you know, there's a step on every count, you know, that as Casey Nicola likes to do. And you're just like, and Brendan, when you come down, gun, gun, and jacket, head, and go, and jacket, and push it back.
She's kind of, oh my God, you know it. You know
she watched
it
us there. Every night. Oh, yeah, she's ready. Yeah. Okay. Our last question is from Curtis.
Okay.
And Curtis says, what is one time that you were dancing so wholeheartedly that you just forgot the world was around you?
Oh.
Wow.
Like, what is one time where you were just like so in the moment and you let everything go? I love that.
Well, Curtis, I feel like I just do that with all of my performances.
Oh,
no, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. That's a really good question. And Curtis, I will tell you this. I live to find that moment again, not only because of what's happening in the world and with the climate that's happening now, but I mean, just in general, because it's hard as you get older, you just want to make sure you're not going to hurt yourself. So yes. If I could stop thinking about that for a moment, that would be great, because that would mean I'm totally in it. And yes, I'm sure there are moments that I do that, but I'm trying to think of like a specific moment.
One thing I can think of, just because we talked about it a lot at the show, was your line where you say, oh, if I had listed it day by day one more time, I was going to kill them all one by one. And there was one performance, I don't know if you know this, Brendan. She says, if I have to listen to day by day one more time, I was going to kill myself one by one. And she had no idea she said that. And so she walks off stage, everyone's laughing. We're like, oh, Angela, that's funny. And she's like, what, you guys? And we're just like, did you not? Oh, so you said this instead. And she's like, oh, I did. And like had no idea. Then it's the night performance. I think this is a Saturday. And does the exact same thing. So she's just she's so wrapped in that motel scene that she just loses the world around her.
Yeah. I mean, Curtis, that could be the one. That could be the moment where either I wasn't paying attention or, and honestly, ignorance is bliss in that moment, because once again, Rain Man does the thing. If I had to listen to day by day one time, I was going to kill myself one by one. Well, and then I walk away with my suitcase. I look back to give Beth focus for her Tony moment. I walk a little bit more. I put my suitcase down. You know, I have my things.
Oh, yeah.
And I had no idea. And then she and Josh were laughing, because she and Josh Franklin were laughing, Beth Level and Josh. And I had no idea. So ignorance is bliss in those moments. There was just so many times that the joy of it does take over. I would say there was times in Something Rotten before those costumes did a number on my back. Where you just, this body's going to be on top. This body's going to.
Oh, it's yeah, just heavy joy. Costumes. I remember that.
It's joy, and it just comes from wherever it comes from. So I guess I could lose myself in those moments.
Or even like I see in my head, like Big Fish, when you guys were doing that. I think it was like the opening to Act Two in those red, white, and blue on that big staircase. Yeah. Like that is such a great visual that I can only imagine what that's like actually on stage doing that.
Yeah. Though, I mean, that was a little bit, I've never been a Rockette, but that was a little more tedious, where you had to make sure, because we all were trying to move as one, but Big Fish in the opening number, there was this very fluid slow motion thing, and you came up gun gun, and then Norbert would sing, be the hero of your story. And I remember those moments I was the circus trainer lady with the big hat. And I just remember like those kind of moments where it was easy on your body, but I love that song so much. I love Norbert's voice. And you just sort of lose yourself in those moments. And then you get to hold a pose
for I like those entirety.
Gun, gun. And I just would look at the house and the audience, and you just, you know, you live in those moments when you actually get to just breathe it in for a moment and be on a Broadway stage and not be too responsible for anything that's happening in that moment. Just try to be pretty with your top hat on.
So I think there's something so iconic in what you said as far as like if there's an ensemble member kind of like dancing behind a principal actor. And I think there's, I don't know if I heard it secondhand, thirdhand, what have you, like down the line of theater history. But it's like, oh, you just got to Angie it. And I was like, what is it? You know, look at the lead, look at the balcony, look at the lead, look at the balcony. And I was like, is this really a thing? And then sure enough, if anyone wants to look this up, I think it's the Macy's Day Thanksgiving Day Parade performance of Something Rotten, when if you see Ange behind Brian D'Arcy James waving this feather just like, blah, 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 and has the "we'll do a musical," and you see Ange and her focus literally just like to Brian, to the camera, to Brian, to the camera. And I'm like, oh, she's doing it. She's doing it.
It's a real thing.
Angie. It's, oh, and it's so effective.
I wish
it was in my handbook when I joined Broadway. There was a section that was just the Angie.
It what?
Totally.
In what handbook? I want to see it. No, but I wish I could take credit for that one. Okay, so real quick,
we go.
The Macy's Parade. I don't know that I'm in the shot, but it's the, you know, it's Brian D'Arcy and Brad Oscar, their moment. And so we're just holding the feather fans. And there is no balcony because it's Macy's Parade. So
of course,
I was doing, looking at Brian, look at the balcony, looking at Brian, look, but nothing else was going on. And I happened to be in the shot. So my friend, Jerry McIntyre, you know, Jerry Mack, Mayor Jerry Mack, he was like, you were just giving it to us. He came up with, look at the lead, look at the balcony.
Okay.
But I use it now. I give him credit. As you do, you know, as we all steal great things throughout our career. But that's where that came from. So, I mean, I was just standing there, so I had to give something.
You are never just standing there, Angie.
You are never just standing there.
So I just gave you eyes. I was like, look at Brian and then look it up.
You may say eyes, but there's a whole storyline there. There's a journey.
Yeah. Yeah, different than our journey for prom because it wasn't cold that year.
Sure.
We weren't quite as cold.
That freezing. Oh, yeah, because the same day as Mean Girls, I remember visiting the trailer and everyone was just like, so
yeah.
I think she was doing the same ritual, but she was more like, look at the lead, look at the time clicker, look at the lead, look at the time clicker. Like, are we almost done?
Can I put my sleeves on? Can I put my coat on? Where's the heater?
Oh my God.
Yeah. But yes, well, I do like that one. Look at the lead, look at the balcony. Thank you, Jerry Mack. But I'm going to continue it wherever I go.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's being continued for you as well in many other productions.
I like it.
The legend.
You know,
of...
knowing who it was that told you, it was probably Beth Johnson. Probably.
Oh, absolutely.
Yep. Because she was my bookend, so she was there too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so everyone was making fun of me.
Well, Jack, should we do a little? Should have shot it.
It's time. Let's do it. Yeah,
it's time. So, Ange, we love to do a little segment. We call it "Should Have Shot It."
Oh God. Okay.
Oh my God. It's gonna be okay. It's gonna be okay. So
you can edit this. So if I'm terrible, you can just edit it out.
It's not like a game.
No, it's not a game.
Oh, good.
It's not a game.
Okay, good.
We have this. Because
I'm just
gonna
do look at the lead, look at the balcony, and nobody's gonna see it.
Perfect.
Or hear
perfect.
It.
Perfect. So when Jack and I worked on the Netflix movie Picture of Prom,
Picture. Yes, I know.
The moving picture, yes, we know. The Meryl Streep, who played the Beth Level role, she
I've
did
heard
not
of her.
About me.
Yeah,
heard of her. She's done a few things, up and coming. And she did this whole rehearsal of a scene that we were going to shoot, and she was trying to like sell an idea. She'd be like, just play the music, I'll show you, and like we just cue the lights, it'll be fine. Did this whole thing, huge number, me brown in a huge blackout. All the extras are sitting there. We're just like wildly applauding. And right before the applause, we hear Meryl shout, "Shoulda shot it." So I think it was just an insane moment for us to kind of like witness it. And we're just so sad. Nobody caught it on camera. Nobody caught it on anything. So it's just kind of like in the mythology of the world. So we want to know if there's any moment in your like life, career, anything, or that you've like gotten to witness that you wish someone was just like, oh, did anybody capture that on any kind of film, any sort of anything?
I gotta say, the first thing that comes to my mind would be the first time I got to go on for Ula in the producers, because I was A, the second cover. I was told I would never go on. And then they gave me my own key. So thank God the orchestra had my new key, because that could have been a disaster. But thank you to Patrick S. Brady, our musical director. He got me my own key. I needed it a half step lower than Katie's. I couldn't do all the little I couldn't do all the dancing and sing it in her key. It just wasn't easy for me or in my voice. So they gave me my own key. So I got thrown on. It was Valentine's Day. I'm thinking it was 2002, right before I did the first national tour. And I wish that was, I wish, should have shot it, because I was nervous as shit. But Matthew and Nathan were so good to me. And you, like, I was like, okay, I was told I'm never going to go on. So I was already felt like a piece of crap anyway, because I was told I wasn't. And yet I'm going, you know? So you already feel like, well, boo. But I knew I could dance it. I knew I was a big, tall blonde. And I thought I was funny anyway. Who knows? So I, you know, you knock on the door and you go, I'm just like, here's the knocker. Gunk, gunk, gunk. This is it, girl. Violi stuck in bloom. And then Matthew and Nathan say, come in. And I go, I open the door and there's Matthew and Nathan just staring at me. And they were like, oh, what do you do, Ula? What do you do? And they brought me in and Nathan kept rubbing my hands because I was probably a little trembly. And he just took my hands. He took my hands and he was like, oh, what do you do, Ula, Ula? You know, and somehow it sort of relaxed me. Mm-hmm. And I made it through. I got Nathan a couple of, he says, well, you got me a couple extra laughs. I just didn't do anything. I just watched him or whatever it was I did. And it just turned out to be like the greatest, one of the greatest moments of my life, because I did six more. I wasn't supposed to go on. First cover was on vacation. I did six more performances that week. And then Stroh asked me to do the first national tour. And then I was on the last 4 years of Broadway as Ula. So I kind of wish that Scott Whitman and Mark Shaiman, they snuck in and watched me from the back in the St. James, right? On the back stairs. Yeah. And, Mark, right before I knocked on the door, Mark said he looked over to Scotty. He goes, what if she stinks? So I guess I didn't, but I kind of wish I would have shot that. That was a long story, but yeah, that's it.
Should have shot it.
Oh my God. Brilliant.
Or maybe brilliant. I was terrible. I don't remember, but it was so out of body. I think it'd be fun to have.
Probably awful, because you ended up taking over the role and playing it for 4 years. So probably really bad.
But just don't remember any of it except for that little moment. So that's a fun little thing. Should have shot it. Sorry it was long. You could condense that.
It's perfect.
No.
It's absolutely
perfect.
We
want all of it.
Angie, this has been a blast. Thanks for coming on the little...
You are stunning.
I love seeing you boys. Even. Thank you for the joy. Thank you for the kind words. And let's hopefully get out of this thing and hopefully we're on the other side. But won't it be fun?
Let's get back on stage.
One thing I was going to say, Brendan, you brought up the 8 shows a week and how hard it is to sort of, you know, come down or whatever. I forget what it was, the question you were asking. But God, wouldn't it be so great to have those problems right now? You know,
it would really be nice.
Yes.
You're just so busy and you got to do this. And I think you were asking me where you wind down, where you go.
Yeah. Where's
Wouldn't
the spot?
Wouldn't it be nice to be like, hey, Jack and Bren, hey, where are we going to go hang out tonight?
Oh, love it.
Wouldn't that be nice if that was our problem?
I want a spot that's not the right side of my couch. You know?
Yes.
Just like, you know, I'm going to sit on the left tonight.
I think we all do. And I can't wait for that. I say that downbeat to come back. Because, you know, I think we're all looking forward to it. So hopefully you'll bring some joy to people with doing this, my boys.
We're trying. Well,
thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Angie.
I love you.
I love
you too. I was told not to leave, but you're still recording. So, hey, when challenge lies ahead and you are filled with dread and worry, gonna give us viral.
Give us some zows.
Oh, boy.
Here we go. You're welcome.
And that's how we wrap it for sure.
That's a wrap.
Hey, it's Brendan.
Hey, it's Jack.
Thanks so much for tuning into our podcast.
Be sure to hop on over to our Instagram @again_podcast and give us a follow.
A like.
A comment.
A DM.
Because we want to hear from you.
Let us know how we're doing.
Sure.
Sure.
Sure. And before you press next to play your next podcast,
hopefully it's us again,
go ahead and hit that subscribe button.
And give us a rating if you love what you're hearing.
Again from the Top is produced by Dory Berenstein.
And Alan Seals.
Stay tuned for our next 5, 6, 7, 8.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.